Ephesians 6, verse 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. It says obey, and it says honor. There's kids that obey, but they don't honor. Junior, take out the trash. Do I have to? Yes, you have to. Always making me do this stuff. Don't you pray? He takes out the trash. Did he obey? Maybe so. Did he honor? Kids and teenagers, you have a biblical obligation before God to honor your parents. Yeah, but sometimes I make rules I don't like. Oh, I missed that verse. I didn't notice that the Bible said only honor your parents when they do what you like. I don't think that's what it says. It says honor your parents. You know what? Sometimes, especially when you get to be teenagers, do you ever have situations sometimes where you think your parents have kind of silly ideas or old-fashioned ideas or they don't understand or something like that? And sometimes are they wrong? And after all, there's some things that you know how to do. You know how to send an attachment on email, and mom goes, oh, I don't know how to do this. So therefore you think, oh, mom doesn't know anything. There's probably some things that you know that your mom doesn't know. There's probably some things that you know that your dad doesn't know. And there's some things that a five-year-old knows that you don't know. There's three-year-olds that speak French. A lot of them over in France. It doesn't mean that they're wiser than you. Okay? Occasionally, you may be right. And when you, 5, 10, 15 years from now, are grown and paying the bills and have your own family, you get to make the rules for your kids, who will sometimes sit there and think that your rules are silly. But you know what they'll have an obligation to do? Show honor to you. But I'm going to tell you something. A lot of the times where you think your parents' rules are silly, your parents are just plain right. Here's why. One time I was talking to a mom and a 13-year-old. They were having trouble. 13-year-old girl. And I said to the girl, I said, do you think your mom knows what it's like to be 13? And she said, no. I laughed. Does the mom know what it's like to be 13? Now you guys think about this real good. Does your mom know what it's like to be 13? Yeah, why? She's been there, done that. She was 13 and 14 and 15 and 16. What's your first name?
PJ.
PJ, how old are you?
14.
Do you think you will know more? Or there's a lot of things you know right now, right?
Yeah.
Some things you don't know. Do you know how to change the oil on the car?
No.
But you'll learn that. There's a lot of stuff you already know. Are you still going to know that stuff a year from now? Yeah. Plus, in the next year, you're going to learn some more things. Yes, he is. So he's going to know more at 15 than 14. By the time you're 16, will you know more yet?
Yeah.
By the time you're 17, will you know more yet?
Yeah.
When you're 20, will you know even more? When you're 25, will you know any more?
Yeah.
When you're 30, will you know even more? When you're 35, will you know even more?
Yeah.
How silly would it be when you're 35 and you have a 13-year-old kid and he says, well, you don't know what it's like to be 13. Yeah, you did that a long time ago, right? You will know what it's like to be 13 and everything past that. Your parents used to be 13 and 14 and 15 and 16. And when you think you don't understand, let me tell you who it is that often doesn't understand. Do you guys know what it's like to be responsible for a teenager? Your mom does. Your dad does. Doesn't mean they're perfect. Doesn't mean that they'll never make a mistake. Doesn't mean that occasionally you might be right about something and they are incorrect about it. But most of the time, they know more about human life than you do. Because they've learned what you've learned and more. And when you are getting older, you will have learned more too. Wouldn't it be silly? Let's stop and think about it. What if all you teenagers had to listen to the rules made by the three-year-olds? Okay, how would that go? Man, can you imagine if three-year-olds were in charge of the world? It wouldn't work. There's a lot of things three-year-olds know. But they don't know as much as teenagers, do they? Mark Twain said, "When I was 18, my father was the biggest fool I knew. By the time I was 21, I was amazed at how much he had learned in 3 years. I remember one time I got a letter from my dad. I was like, wow, how do you know these things? You know, he was warning me, you know, you need to think about this and this, because it, and oh, I wish I'd got this letter earlier. You know, how do you know? You know, that I'd have these problems and run into this stuff. Well, Dad had been around a lot longer than I had. And I started reading. I remember when I was in high school sometimes, I didn't like his advice and his rules. I didn't. And then later, I got to wanting his advice. When I was about 20 or 21, I went to him. I said, Dad, what should I do? He said, I think you're going to need to decide that. And I'm like, you know, a few years before, I'd have been given anything for him to say, yeah, Scott, you just make all your decisions. Because I said, wait a minute. You know, you used to tell me what to do, and now I'm asking. He said, well, now you're mature enough to make your decisions yourself. Oh, your parents are smarter than you think they are. And as you get a little bit older, you're going to look back and realize, oh, Mom knew what she was talking about. I'm glad Dad told me that. There will be a few things where you'll look back and you'll realize, you know, the way Mom and Dad did that, I think I see a better way. And then you know what you can do? When you get married and you have your family, do it that better way. Build on the shoulder of your parents, take the good knowledge you've gotten from them, and then continue to build higher. I hope every one of my kids is better than me. But don't get to thinking that you don't need your parents' advice and instruction while you're still at home. Sometimes, look at that prodigal son there in Luke chapter 15. As we said, the main point here is what this illustrates. All of us before God have sinned. We took God's blessings and went away and squandered, used them badly. And then we need to come back to our Father realizing that we've sinned and be forgiven by Him. That's the spiritual point here. And that's true. Everything here is a blessing from God, right? Sunshine, who made that? Well, that would be God. The food, who made it? God. The idea of where plants produce oxygen and need carbon dioxide, and we take in oxygen and produce carbon dioxide, who came up with that system? God came up with that system. Who came up with our nose pointing down this way instead of up that way where we drown when it rained? You know, there was all these blessings that we have from God, and even atheists want his blessings, don't they? Even if they don't understand where they come from, most atheists, you know, do they want food? Do they want sunshine? Do they want blue skies? Do they want the flowers to come out in the spring? People want God's blessings, but they don't want his rules. And that's what this young man was like here. But we're not going to go so much into that spiritual application. We're just going to back up and take a look at it from the family dynamics. Listen to the story. Luke 15:11. A certain man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of your substance that falls to me. And he divided unto them his living. Not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country. And there he wasted his substance with riotous living. When he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that country, and behold, he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to one of the citizens of that country and sent him into the fields to feed swine. And would fain have filled his belly with the husk that the swine did eat, but no man gave to him. But when he came to himself, he said, How many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare, and here I perish with hunger. I'll arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and in your sight. I'm no more worthy to be called your son. Make me one of your hired servants. And he goes back to his father. His father has mercy on him and does more than that. And that's how we ought to come before God. Realizing we don't deserve to be sons, just let us be servants. But what does God let us be? Let us be sons and daughters. But look at that fellow and notice what he wanted. Wanted his father's goods and none of his father's rules. He didn't want to hear that, boys, time to go to bed. You know, we got the back 40 to plow tomorrow. Things to do, need to go to bed. Boys, time to get up. Boys, stop playing, we need to do it. Oh, he's tired of those rules. So when he got the money, where did he go? To a far country. Why did he want that far country? Because that's not where his daddy was. Wanted to get way over there, and he's living it up. Got all that money. There was a young man in Gettysburg. One of the boys at church knows him. He inherited $35,000 or so when he was 18 years old. I think it was gone in 6 weeks. Poof, it's all gone. Now he's in trouble. When he came to himself, look at the text and see when he came to himself. Look at the verse right back. He's in the pig pen. But look at the statement right before where it says, when he came to himself. One of you brothers, tell me what it says immediately before that. No one gave to him. If mom had said, oh, my baby, and sent him a check, here's another 10,000. Do you think he would have learned his lesson? No, don't enable him. When no one gave to him and he suffered consequences, how many people have you known in life that didn't get it until they suffered consequences? There's a lot of, you know when a lot of people get interested in coming to the Lord? Late 20s, early 30s, after they made a lot of stupid mistakes and suffered and suffered and suffered for it, and then realized, oh, this is, I'm banging my head to pieces here. And then they start looking for God, because consequences got their attention. But notice what he wanted. Right? Teenagers, have you ever said the following words? And if you did, what went in the blank at the end of the sentence? I'm 16. I'm old enough to... I'm 14. I ought to be able to... Or I'm 17. I ought to be able to... Now, what goes in the blank? Was it, I'm 17. I ought to pay part of the property taxes. Is that what you're saying? I'm 14. I ought to be doing the laundry half the time. Is that what you're saying? Parents, when you've heard that line, what usually came after, I'm 14. I ought to be able to privilege, right? Let me tell you guys something. Privilege comes with responsibility. Some of you guys are going to be out on your own soon. And you know what? That's a lot of responsibility. I remember when I went from home to college, and that's kind of on my own, but, you know, a lot of that was paid for by my dad. And
Then,
but when I got out and fully on my own, I needed to get a place to live. I went down and get a mobile home, and they wouldn't give me a loan. I didn't have any credit. So I had to go to a friend, and he said, I'll co-sign for you. And then I got the mobile home, and I got a lot rented on out in the country. And all of a sudden, there's just all sorts of things. How am I going to get my mail? There's no mailbox or anything. What? It just, who's going to do that for me? Dad, no. I got to go get a wooden post. I got to dig a hole. I got to go get a mailbox. I got to put it on there. I got to go down to hook up my water. And guess what? They want a lot of money before they'll even get any water, before they'll even give me electricity. That'll be a $250 deposit. What? That'll be, and it's like, whoa. All of a sudden, there's all these responsibilities. Oh, and listen, there's lots of fun stuff. Property taxes. That's a lot of fun. I pay about $250 a month on property taxes. It's just, or $200 a month or $150 a month just on the school taxes. And then, in Pennsylvania, we got per capita tax. They haven't come up with breathing in and out tax, but give them a little bit of time. We got state income tax. We got county income tax. 1.6% county income tax. And it just, money's just going right. And guess what? There's a sign down in Jeff's office. What does it say? It's the one about teenagers think you know everything. What does it say?
Attention teenagers, if you think you know everything and you want it now, act quickly while you still know everything.
Yeah, move out, pay your own bills while you still know everything. There's a lot of bills that need to be paid. When a young man is sitting there acting like his parents don't know anything, he ought to be able to do this and he ought to be able to do that, whose bed are you sleeping on? Did you pay for that bed? Mom and Dad did. Who paid for the pillow? Mom and Dad. Who paid for the heat? Mom and Dad. Who paid for lunch? Mom and Dad. Who cooked lunch? Mom. You know, who's... When you start to say, I'm 17, you know what you need to be thinking about? I'm 17, I'm old enough to start having some responsibilities. With responsibility comes privilege. Don't get that backwards. Don't think that just because let me tell you something. Real life, men, is real life about every day you just get up and you get to do anything and everything you want? Is that what real life is like? I'm 32! You know, I don't have to do anything. We got a fellow like that in town. He just, every day, he just stands on the street corner in front of his house and just watches traffic. That's all he wants to do, and that's about all he's fit for, I guess. I don't think he's got much of a life. Doesn't work. Real life is about responsibilities. When we fulfill responsibilities, along also comes privileges. But don't get to thinking, because I had a birthday, the world needs to start giving me stuff. It's not how it works. Okay, you might get a cake, but, you know, next day it's not your birthday anymore. Start thinking about responsibilities. And think about where you want to be. Where do you want to be 10 years from now? Exactly. Ryan, where do you guys want to be 10 years from now, 15 years from now? What do you want life to be like? I ask this question oftentimes to young people when we're working with them. They're like one fellow. I can see. You can just see sometimes they're going the wrong way. And so this one fellow said, where do you want to be 10 years from now? He was 16. And he said, well, he wanted to be a particular kind of scientist that dealt with insects. Okay? You know, where do you want to live? I want a nice house out in the country, big house out in the country. Okay? You want to be married? Yeah. What you want your life to be? You want to be pretty? Yeah, yeah. Want to be honest? Yeah, yeah. Want to be nice and good? Yeah, yeah. You want kids? Yeah. What kind of kids you want? Oh, good kids. You know, kids that obey and that I can trust and everything. Yeah. Want a big dog, want some guns and stuff. Okay. And I said, if you want to be there, you've got to be making different choices right now. Because this guy was in, he was getting in all kinds of trouble. He was in a special, you know, school, and just repeatedly in trouble and stuff, juvenile trouble. And I said, if you don't change, you're going to spend most of your life in jail. I went to see him a few weeks ago. In jail. He's in prison right now. Fortunately, he's getting serious now, these years later. And he's been studying his Bible. And he wants me to study with him. And so next week, next Thursday, I'm going to go back up again, up in northern Pennsylvania, go through those bars, get back there, and study with him again. Wouldn't it have been kind of a good idea if he would have listened years ago? If he'd wanted those things, what did he need to do? If he'd wanted to get that job, he needed to be studying in school. He wasn't. If he wanted to have a girl character, he needed to be developing character in himself. He wasn't. He ended up committing robbery, which is what got him in prison and such. Where you end up a few years from now depends on choices that you make now. And some of the things that seem so important right now, what are some of the things that seem real important when you're around high school age? If everybody has a certain brand shoe or a certain brand jeans or something else, then what? Oh, I got to have that. You know how important that's going to be 10 years from now? It's not going to be very important. And some of the people that you're in high school with who are very popular now, they're not going to amount to very much at all in life. A few years from now, some of the real popular kids, or some of them are not going to have a job, some of them are going to be divorced, some of them are going to be alcoholics. Parents, raise your hand if you know from experience that that's the way it goes with a lot of kids in high school. Now, some of them will do well, but where we get to depends on choices that we make. And primarily, that you might have a job and you might not be divorced, but you might be separate from God, and then what do you have? Right now, is it enjoyable when somebody of the opposite gender finds you appealing and attractive? Is that nice? There's going to be more people like that. But the question is, what character do they have? And is that somebody that would be worthy of marriage? And is it somebody that would help you get to heaven and wants you to help them get to heaven? And if not, that's the wrong relationship. Oh, but she's so cute. Oh, but he's so handsome. Why don't you think for a second about your grandparents? Sorry, grandparents. I'm a grandparent too now. Teenagers, I want you to think about your grandparents. Your grandparents seem to be just, whoa, you know, knockout good looking, just really... You know, man, grandma's hot. You know what? When your grandma married your grandpa, he thought she was mighty fine. And hopefully he still does. And hopefully he's still enjoying a wonderful relationship with her, even though they both know that their hair color might have changed and there's a few wrinkles and stuff like that, but hopefully he still finds her attractive and exciting. You might go, ew! But let me tell you something. Life doesn't stop and freeze frame at 20. Then you're going to turn 21 and 22 and 23 and 24 and 25. Then you're going to be 35, then you're going to be 45, then you're going to be 55. And if you make stupid decisions now based upon things that only get your attention at 20 or 18 or 16, oh, you can ask for a painful, painful life. Best looking girl at school, you know what she's going to look like? Your grandma may have been the best looking girl in school too. They're going to get older. You know what you guys are going to look like? You're going to get old. It's going to happen. And you know what a lot of men do? As we talked about our first night on husbands, you know what a lot of men do as soon as their wife starts looking not like she's 19 or 20? They dump her for somebody that does. And if you end up, young ladies, if you end up choosing a fella that's not interested in spiritual things and not interested in God and he's only interested in you because of how you look, what's he going to do when you don't look like that and somebody else does? Choose somebody that wants to obey God and that will love you and that will continue to be in love with you, and love that will grow deeper, not a superficial, shallow love, but a love that will grow deeper as the decades go by. Somebody that will, as we said from Proverbs 5, rejoice in the wife of your youth, be exhilarated in her love. We talked Friday night about the obligation from 1 Corinthians 7. Husbands, your body doesn't belong to you, but to your wife. Don't defraud her. And it also said, wives, your body doesn't belong to you, it belongs to your husband. Don't defraud him. The physical relationship in marriage is a beautiful and wonderful thing. And it accomplishes a number of purposes. It does bring children into the world, which is beautiful. Let me tell you something else it does. In marriage, you're going to irritate each other. In marriage, you're going to sometimes have an argument. It's easier to kiss and make up in the bond of love, where in the intimacy of a marriage relationship, you can't be mad at a person when you're being romantic with them. There's a tension. Just think about it, adults. There's tension that's relieved, and there's joy that's enjoyed in the one flesh relationship of marriage that helps just repair and bond that marriage. There need to be apologies, and I'm sorry, honey, and I'm sorry, honey. And just a tip to, especially for you when you guys get married, when you have an argument, you know, you marry Jennifer or whoever, and the first time you have an argument, don't run home and tell your mom what Jennifer said to you. She said this and that and that. And Jennifer, don't run home and say, well, Steve said this and that and that. Because you know what? The newlyweds, by the end of the day, they're going to say they're sorry and be cuddling and be and hugging and kissing. They're going to be fine. But the in-laws aren't going to be in on the kissing and the making up. And they're going to remember, Jennifer said that to my baby. You know. Solve your problems there. But let me tell you this also. That physical relationship is a serious relationship. And it's not to be engaged in by people that you're not serious enough to be married to. If you engage in that behavior with people that you're not married to, what are you saving for the people that you're married to? If, well, but I love her. Are you ready to be responsible for her and to say, I do, I take you as my wife, and I'm going to be responsible, and I'm going to provide for you for the rest of my life in sickness and in health for richer. Nope. You don't love her enough to be engaged in this physical relationship. What does Hebrews 13 say? God will judge fornicators and adulterers. Let the bed be undefiled. Let marriage be had in honor among all. When you find the right person, then you marry that person and enjoy marriage and let it get richer and deeper as time goes on. Help each other spiritually. Be available for each other physically. Communicate with each other. Raise children that God gives you and enjoy that relationship and the joy that it brings to your life. But young people, don't buy in to the example out there in the world that invites you to act like you're married when you're not. And don't dress in ways showing off your body. Girls, and guys too, but especially girls. Simply because men are more visually oriented than women usually. Your physical form is something that God created to be attractive to the male gender. If you're married, don't be showing that to people that aren't your husband. If you're not married yet, don't be showing it to people who aren't your husband yet. When you get married, enjoy that relationship. There was, years ago, Tom Green, who was a writer for the Chicago Tribune, he had an article. He had written an article about these suggestive t-shirts that were being worn at the time that were real tight and, you know, really emphasized the girl's body and had pictures or words written across them that drew the eyes there and said suggestive things. And one woman wrote in and she said, I'm 25 years old. I'm considered very attractive. She said, I have a very good figure. And I will not wear those t-shirts because my body is for my husband. Not every man walking up and down the street. Tom Green had a friend who was a playboy type. You know, he'd go to a bar, meet a girl, you know, wake up the next day, not necessarily remember her name. And he read that lady's letter, and he was smitten. And he contacted Tom, and he says, basically, that's the woman I want. He said, but I know she'd never have me. That's right. She was married, and she wasn't looking for somebody. But he writes, that's what he wanted. And he started describing his lifestyle, and he said it used to be real exciting, but it's kind of gotten unexciting. And can you see why? Well, I mean, he's got a lot of immediate gratification just, you know, regularly meeting various women and taking them home and such. Why? It seems like that would be gratifying. Well, but how special was he? If he hadn't been in the bar and gone home with the girl, where would she have been? Gone home alone, pining for him, waiting for Prince Charming. No, she was going home with somebody, right? How special was he? You know that right now, sexual transmitted diseases, there's so many more diseases now than there used to be. I don't know if you know about HPV, but it's epidemic proportions. Up there in the Northeast, I read a book about it. Talk about this exploding epidemic, and then I started running into people. I'm studying with a guy. He had HPV. His uncle had HPV and had to have his member amputated. His sisters or brothers or something, girlfriend or something, had HPV. I was talking to a lady recently. She had a kind of cancer. Looked like she probably had cancer. It could end up being fatal. And she was discussing. She said, well, I used to be promiscuous. And I said, HPV? She said, yes. There are estimates right now out there, I'm trying to remember, between ages, I think it's between about 20 and 25, one out of two sexually active females will have HPV. When these guys are going down there, you know, at the airport they have that thing you got to go through that shows if you got metal on you. If they had one of those that detected sexually transmitted diseases, about half of the sexually active people out there would set that thing off. HPV can be fatal or it can be a nuisance and go away. There's various strains of it. And then there's a lot of other ones, of course, that you've heard about more often. Don't buy into the devil's ideas. This fellow, who'd been following the devil's ideas, found that what seemed so exciting at first was getting kind of unexciting, because the women he was around really didn't care anything about him, did they? And you know what he saw that then looked really exciting? A woman that would love a man so much that she wouldn't be available for anybody else but just for him? Wow! That was exciting. Guess whose idea that is? This is God's idea from a long time ago. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And Jesus said, what God joined together, let no man put asunder. You know what the devil generally does? He gets you something exciting up front, and oftentimes it just gets worse and worse later. You know how God's system works? Things get better. You had the old covenant and the new covenant, better. You remember when Jesus said they ran out of wine at the wedding feast and he turned the water into wine? They said, wow, this is better. He saved the best for last. We are gloriously and wonderfully made, but in 1 Corinthians 15 talks about the resurrected body that's so much better. But you know what that requires? It requires some patience, doesn't it? Why do people like to get drunk? They feel good. How do they feel later? You know, you see the TV commercials about people drinking. How often do they say, this bud's for you, and it's a wino in the alley? Oh, it's people laughing, handsome guys, pretty girls. Let's talk. We had a young man just come back to the Lord a few weeks ago. He's about 20. And he was talking with me the other day. He had gotten, while he was away from the Lord, he'd gotten sexually involved. And so, of course, and he stopped that. But, of course, that's harder for him now because he'd made the mistake of doing that. And he'd gone and gotten drunk. He thought, and this is just a few weeks ago before he came back to God. He thought, well, I want to see what that's like. And he said, I'm laying there, and one of the other guys is kicking me, saying, roll over, you're going to throw up and die, you know, because he was lying on his back. And, you know, he needed to roll over so when you vomit, it'll, you know, not choke you. Boy, that's glorious, isn't it? Don't buy into the devil's systems. I want to close with this illustration. There's something, I read some research years ago about EQ and IQ. IQ is your intelligence quotient, determines how intelligent you are. And this research said that more important than intelligence quotient was your emotional quotient. You know what that is? They tested it with kids by taking little guys, a little bit older than this one, a little bit younger than this one. They were maybe about 4, 5, 6 years old. And they would put them in a room, and they'd put a marshmallow in front of them. And they'd say, I'm going to leave and come back in 3 minutes. If you won't eat the marshmallow while I'm gone, I'm going to come back and give you 2 more marshmallows. And then they would leave, and there's a video camera rolling. Of course, what did some kids do? You know, and that's a low EQ, low emotional quotient. Others would sit there, and they'd look in the marshmallow, they might finger and touch it, but they'd sit there and they'd wait. And they'd wait. And when they came back, boom, 3 marshmallows. And then they tracked these kids, and they said, the kids that waited and got the 3 marshmallows did better in life, and it was a better indication of how they would do in life than how intelligent they were. And can you see why? The kid that grabs a marshmallow, what's he going to do when he gets a credit card? What's he going to do when some girl, you know, comes up and propositions him and she's got 2 or 3 sexually transmitted diseases? Is he going to think about the future? What's he going to do when somebody wants him to, you know, criminal activity, all sorts of things he's potentially liable for, right? Have patience. Aim. Think about what you want in life. The things that you think are so important right now, a lot of those things are not going to be as important a little bit later. Focus on those important things. Remember Ecclesiastes 12:1. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. You decide now what kind of family you want. You be looking, young men, for the woman that's going to help you get to heaven. You be looking, young ladies, for a man that's going to help you get to heaven. Also, somebody that you enjoy being around and somebody that you're attracted to. But if they're not going to help you get to heaven, what good is it going to be to spend time with?